Defense planners have lots of variables to manage in order to maintain maximum strength with the dollars they've got. Lately, they've been talking about how to modernize the forces. That can mean nearly anything. Dakota Wood is a senior research fellow for defense programs at the Heritage Foundation. He tells Tom Temin how the Defense Department defines modernization and how that differs from what it calls new capabilities.
New capabilities are, use these words like leap ahead or transformational or revolutionary, which I think have gotten kind of useless. But the idea is new things, you're looking very much downstream 15, 20 years. And so research and development, what DARPA might be kicking out, those sorts of things. Modernization blends into that, but I think it's more of a near-term perspective. You know that you have an aircraft that's getting ready to end its lifespan with flight hours, or maybe a submarine that's reactor's core, or it's the number of times it's dived at deep depths. You've got an end of lifespan. Vehicles are the same way. So you know that you need to replace an existing capability with whatever that next generation is. So modernization really is making more modern something that is rapidly becoming antiquated.
And DOD at this moment has quite a lot of things there that, by that definition, are due for modernizing.
You know, if you look at tactical aircraft within the Air Force, the existing primary fleet, F-16s, F-15s, it's used up about 80% of its usable life, hence the urgency to get the replacement item, right now it's the F-35, on board. So that would be a modernization effort. If you looked at new capabilities, and you start talking like Gen 6, you know, what's the after F-22, F-35 airplane. So we're already thinking about that, but that's, you know, that's 20 years down the road. So aircraft modernization, really key. The nuclear infrastructure, weapons design is another big thing. And I think submarines is probably a good element to think about, kind of a triangle there. So SSBNX, the replacement for the ballistic missile submarines, which will be coming to the end of their life in the 2020s. What's the follow-on to that? Big price tags, but it's something that you can predict.
I guess I didn't realize submarines do have a limit on the number of times they can deep dive and how long they can operate. Then they just, what happens, the metal gets weak and it's time to just scrap them?
So I had a friend of mine explain this great. It's when an airplane goes up to extreme altitude, you're changing one atmosphere. A submarine going underwater could be 10 times that, you know, when you start thinking about the crushing depths of water, 10 times or more. So the metal hull is compressed, and then it expands, compresses and expands, and it fatigues over time. And then you have the reactor core. So this thing is emitting a lot of radioactive particles, and a containment vessel can only absorb so much of that, then it becomes brittle. So that has a fixed lifespan as well. So submarines have a very easily to define and measure lifespan, and when it gets to the end, it's not like you can put in a new transmission or, you know, re-weld panels or something like that. That's done, and you can't extend it, so you have to replace the entire boat.
And of course, the submarine fleet leads to the nuclear question, and that debate is just starting to really heat up, I think, with respect to how the nuclear weapons themselves are to be modernized or replaced, or what's the story there? Because presuming that's still part of the doctrine to have that triad, a lot of those weapons are quite old.
As you see proliferation around the world, you know, more actors joining the nuclear club, you know, the increased importance of a strong, credible nuclear deterrent still has continued relevance. You know, we've left the Cold War, but this idea of people with deep nuclear inventories still exists. So you have to have that. And based on self-imposed restrictions, we haven't done any new design work in decades. We haven't done any testing, you know, active testing in over a quarter century. So the thought is that the intellectual capability, designs, innovations, you know, what new out there might be possible, we haven't really explored that. Meanwhile, you've got other entities like North Korea, Russia, Iran, which is aspirational nuclear power, et cetera, they're not so constrained. And so they've been coming up with new ideas. And, you know, you don't know what you don't know until you do experimentation, research, and development. So the idea of re-energizing America's approach to nuclear weapons design use capabilities is something that's really grabbed a lot of attention. And again, it's another expensive proposition.
We're speaking with Dakota Wood, Senior Research Fellow for Defense Programs at the Heritage Foundation. And how skillful is DOD at budgeting for modernization, and how good is it at getting on the same page or getting Congress on the same page as it with respect to what sounds like pretty important tactical questions?
Yeah, I think the second part of that is the more problematic. In terms of knowing what you need, it's an easier path. Every year, the service officials go before Congress and they say, given the basket that we've been told, you know, from the executive branch on down, right, you know, the presidential administration, this is kind of the area of spending or the budget, and then this is how we think we need to apportion that planned budget. And then you always have this unfunded requirements, you know, the wish list. If we had some more money, then these are other things that we think that we need to acquire as well. So articulating requirements is a fairly easy thing. Getting that through Congress, because Congress is dealing not only with the defense budget, but with all the other spending that goes on. Right now, the proposed defense budget is something like 15% or less of proposed federal spending for the coming year. $4.1 trillion federal budget. Of that, defense spending will be around $600 billion. So it's the congressional piece and the fighting that goes on between various philosophies and the role of government and where you want to spend those taxpayer dollars. That's the real problem right there in terms of providing adequate funding to defense modernization.
Now, the Pentagon has been pursuing or recently started pursuing something called the offset strategy. Is that a modernization type of bucket or is that something long term?
It's a long-term thing. It's a recognition that you can develop capabilities that keep you more than a step ahead of who your competitors are. And the offset piece that comes from, if my opponent has more things, it's if they have a numerical superiority, how do I offset that advantage that they have in numbers or maybe geographic positioning? And in the past, it's been with technology. So in the 50s and the 60s, it was a nuclear offset. We would use nuclear weapons in Europe vis-a-vis the Soviet Union, where they had many more forces that they could throw into the fight. As you got into the 80s and you had advanced computers, networking technologies, precision-guided munitions, this networked battle force, you know, tying in satellites and all the rest, was a way to offset an opponent's numerical advantage. So as we get into today and the proliferation of modern technologies, and the ability to acquire those advanced technologies at a lower cost makes it easier for others to almost get up to our level. So this third offset is viewed how do you exploit unmanned systems, robotics, big data mining and processing? You know, can you use modern things more effectively and more innovatively than your opponent to maintain that advantage? So they're looking, you know, 15, 20 years down the road and trying to exploit what commercial industry is doing and make that relevant to a military use in defense of U.S. interests.
And in the short term, given the budget situation and the kind of tug and pull between the military and the administration, with an administration changing, should the next crew come in and decide to take a different military strategy, it would be a couple of years before the dollars could really be reflected, and then they could start this modernizing at a higher pace than they're doing it now.
The dollars are really the limiting factor. I hate to keep going back to the checkbook, but the money is what enables you to have modern stuff and sufficient numbers so that it's militarily meaningful in any kind of operational setting. What we're seeing now in testimony before the Senate and the House as we get into this budgeting cycle is a lot of tales of woe. I mean, the Army had 45 brigade combat teams in 2012, so just a few years ago. They're now down to 31, and only a third of those, so only about 10 or so, are at acceptable levels of readiness. So we've seen a huge decline in readiness across the force. The Air Force would want to fly upwards of 200 hours a year per pilot. You drop below 150 and just completely combat ineffective. And I've heard reports of pilots flying only 8 or 9 hours a month, which is less than 100 hours per year. So you've got this huge decline in readiness, aging equipment, smaller numbers, so you're using it up more rapidly, so further aging, and it's going to take more money than what anybody is really thinking about at the moment. I'm projecting the need is actually around the $700 plus billion per year.